I'm Cynthia Rothrock.
I'm Casper Van Dien.
Hi, this is Mike Grell, and I'm here with the Long Box guys, whoever the hell they are.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Long Box, guys. My name is Tom Strange. With me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid. LT, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I am doing okay, and I am drinking Suntory whiskey.
Oh, that is the whiskey that Bill Murray was doing a commercial for in Lost in Translation, correct?
Yes.
Oh, deep cut. Deep cut there, my friend. Mikey, how are you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent. I am drinking a Magic Hat number 9. I don't want to get us off on a tangent already, but I had the most incredible weekend. I was at a flea market. A guy was selling comic books for a nickel a piece, and there was standing next to me who was also a comic book collector, who also, of course, had a podcast. His name was Ray from Nerds Who Get Laid Sometimes. Great podcast. You guys should totally check him out. But as Chris, the guy selling the comics, were pulling him out of his box and we were looking at him, we both had our lists and we were both looking for Alpha Flights. And every time I needed an Alpha Flight, Ray didn't need it, and whenever Ray needed an Alpha Flight, I didn't need it. Sorry. I went off on a tangent, Josh. That's your job.
How many comics did you walk away from, Mike? What kind of damage did you do to the nickel box?
I bought $5 worth of comics.
I limited myself to just $5 worth of comics. It's not that much.
He told me he has 10,000 at his house that he has to go through to get rid of, and I was like, I will come over and help you sort your stuff out. He actually told me, he gave me his email, and he's like, just send me your list. I'll go through it, and when I find them, I'll just pull them off to the side for you.
Maybe it's time to start a comic shop. We just buy all 10,000.
Yeah, maybe.
Might be God telling us something, guys. Just saying.
Just saying.
Janet will be so pissed if I come home with a U-Haul full of comic books. I'm just throwing that out there right now.
I got a seller. Josh, you have an apartment downstairs and someone you're trying to get rid of in there. So just bury them in comic books.
Yeah, that would not be a deterrent.
Yeah.
Mike, did you mention what you're drinking?
Yeah, I'm drinking a Magic Hat number 9. But what's Josh drinking?
Yeah, what do you got there, buddy?
I have Sierra Nevada's Hazy Little Thing IPA. It's a nice day drinker.
Trying to kill himself again.
No, I'm okay. They up my insulin. I'm correcting through modern medicine.
The goal is to get you off the insulin, buddy.
Oh. That was explained incorrectly at the doctor's office.
And let me just mention something. Because my buddy Josh says he wants to get in better shape and wants to get off insulin. I said, oh, great, we'll go running together. This asshole smoked my ass going up and down the Blue Mountains. What was that place we went?
Blue Hills. Yep.
Oh my God, we ran up and down the Blue Hills until I was about ready to puke. And he's like, "Hey, you want to do some hill runs next?" Fuck you, Josh. Fuck you and fuck your health. But we got to do it again next weekend, or maybe we'll do the Philly Stairs this week.
Oh yeah.
Oh, we like the Philly Stairs. Those are fun. Okay, Tommy. What's the thing we're doing this week?
Westerns. That's right.
We're doing westerns.
Well, that wasn't bad. Yeah.
That's a good one, Tom.
Nice. Yeah, thanks. And just like some of the Westerns, the good, the bad, and the ugly. By the way, the guy who was the ugly had no idea. He thought he was the bad.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite stories about that movie. Like, wait, I'm the ugly? Clint Eastwood's right there.
Yeah.
All right.
Plus, Eli Wallach, also known as Batman 66, is Mr. Freeze.
Yeah. Right. That's what everyone remembers him as. Batman 66 is Mr. Freeze.
What has Clint Eastwood done? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. I remember a couple years ago he was yelling at a chair for some reason. That's all I recall.
Yeah. He doesn't even have a friend who will sit in the chair so he can yell at him.
Yeah, and that was actually just Chippendale Chairface lying on the stage.
Ooh, good deep cut. All right, so today we are going to be talking about Western superheroes and supervillains, some of our favorites, some of the superheroes that kind of came out of that odd part of the Marvel Universe where Westerns were more popular than superheroes, and sometimes the superhero and the Western kind of got combined. Mikey, what's one of your favorites?
Well, I think we should talk about the history of it first, right? So
sure.
In the 1940s, when comics first started coming around, there were all types of different comics, mostly developed from the pulps, right? Then superheroes came around. They became hugely popular. And then they kind of died off in the 1950s due to the comic book code of authority. But at that point, Westerns were king. And they were the king of comics, too. They were totally dominating the sales while superhero sales went into the slumps. They in the 60s when, you know, Flash and Fantastic Four and all the science-based superheroes came out, they surpassed the Westerns and they fell down again until the 70s when they had a resurgence with the supernatural being combined with the Westerns. And that's when you see stuff like people we're going to talk about who came about in the 1970s with a resurgence in those comics. They've kind of petered out since then. Every once in a while there's a Western and you see other comics that are Western inspired that aren't the traditional Westerns still in today's comics, but in Europe has in the 1950s fell in love with Western comics and they have never lost their love for Western comics. There are still ongoing Western comics in Europe that have been going on for well over 60 years. And I'll talk about some of them later on.
All right, great. So let's talk about a couple of our favorites. Tommy, you got a favorite for us?
Well, I'm going to start with Jonah Hex.
Drink.
From the, 2006 to 2011 series. Jonah Hex number 50 by Justin Gray, Jimmy Palmiotti, Darwin Cook, and Dave Stewart. In this double-sized issue, Jonah Hex and Tallulah Black get it on and Tallulah Black goes her separate ways, decides to settle down and make a life for herself in a sleepy little town. And Jonah Hex takes on a huge bounty of about 50 guys. Tallulah Black is just trying to keep on her own and such. She has a baby, and that baby is stolen from her. And Jonah Hex just happens to be plowing through town, and Tallulah Black kind of tells Jonah about the baby, and Jonah decides that he knows exactly who the father is and heads out to capture this baby and bring it back to Tallulah. And unfortunately, the baby he did not save, but he did manage to hunt down all 50 of his bounties at the same time, and he brought the baby's dead corpse back to Tallulah Black, and it kind of all ended with the town that she had been in kind of nearly being destroyed because that's where all the people were hiding out. And it was just skillfully written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. The artwork by Darwin Cook was fantastic, and I really, really don't like Westerns, but this was a great story.
And for those of you who aren't in the know, Jonah Hex is an anti-hero along the same traits of the stranger who walks into town, a la the Clint Eastwood movies for the spaghetti Westerns that he used to have. In this case, though, Hex is a bounty hunter. He cut his teeth, per se, in as a Confederate soldier during the Civil War. At the end of the war, things went bad, and he headed out west. At one point during the Civil War is where he got his face all mangled up, and that's the classic version that you get of him with, you know, his part of his lip coming down over the other part of his lip. There was a horrible DC Comics movie that we should not talk about.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it should remain unspoken of.
I kind of liked it.
Shut up.
By the way, I always thought in the comic book he got the thing from a tomahawk scar from the Mark of the Demon with the tomahawk? Wasn't that the classic comic book version of how he got the scar?
Depends on which origin you're talking about. Because his origin was retold a couple times to make it more of his commanding officer from his days in the Confederacy was behind getting them all scarred up.
Okay, I'll buy that. Josh, what do you got for us?
Hey, I'm sorry, before we go to Josh.
It's not done.
Okay.
There are some more Jonah Hex stories that I really want to recommend because he is the penultimate Western hero for DC Comics. For example, if you really want to check him out, you should go and you like superheroes. Go check out All-Star Western Guns in Gotham. It's available as a graphic novel on Amazon, or if you would like the floppies, it's issues 1-6 of the New 52 series. It's also by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti that LT talked about. In this case, Jonah Hex is not in the Wild West. He's in Gotham City, and he teams up with Amadeus Arkham to fight the Religion of Crime, which is the precursor for the Court of Owls. It's a really good series, and it's kind of like Holmes and Watson if Holmes was a ruthless bounty hunter instead of a great detective. but it's a fun series. And the volume 2 of Jonah Hex that LT had recommended, there's a graphic novel called A Face Full of Violence, which collects issues 1-6 of that volume 2 series by Gray and Palmiotti. It's just a series of short stories. Each issue is self-contained, but the first issue is my favorite of all time. Hex is hired to track down a kidnapped boy who he finds out has been thrown into a dogfighting arena and is fighting the dogs in the arena. When he finds the boy, he saves him, but throws the owner of the dogs into the pit with the dogs to get eaten alive by the dogs that he trained to fight. And
Michael Vick.
And on his way back to return the child, he realizes the child has rabies and has to kill the kid. It is.
Wait. Does he have to do it with a shovel out back?
Yeah, Old Yeller style.
Yeah, Old Yeller style. Put Old Yeller on his ass.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite running gags from our podcast.
wait. Old Yeller dies at the end?
It's spoiler.
Oh, man.
I still haven't seen that movie.
Read an eighth grade book. All right. That's a great. I do love Jonah Hex, and I like. Josh and I are both anti-time travel guys, but I'm always kind of happy to see Jonah Hex show up because he's always pretty cool. Josh, what do you got?
Being an anti-time travel guy, I'm going to recommend something with time travel in it.
I did not see that one coming.
No,
dun, dun, dun.
You might want to go back and listen to this again. But yeah, so in the 70s, Marvel had a character called Red Wolf. He was in comics alongside of Lobo. He was a traditional sort of awfully stereotyped Native American. But then Marvel had their 1872 series where they took characters from Secret Wars and sort of steampunked them. And they reintroduce Red Wolf. And I won't spoil what happens in 1872, but I will recommend the follow-up to that, which is Red Wolf, Man Out of Time. So the character then, Red Wolf, who is the sheriff of the small town of Timely, is tracking down a killer and finds out that some strange ray or some sort of strange weapon is killing folks around town. He tracks down the guy, and it turns out it is a man from the future who has decided to come back and look for the natural resources of the area, not to spoil the whole thing. And he gets basically shot by a beam and carried halfway in between the time stream and is deposited in basically present-day Arizona, where he goes on a series of adventures to track down the time-traveling bad guy, as well as helping the local authorities out with his extraordinarily heightened primitive skills like tracking and hand-to-hand combat. And go ahead. Sorry?
It's Heisenberg, isn't it? And he's finding really, the Breaking Bad. He just gets right into Breaking Bad.
And it's a mini series. It's pretty brief. But Red Wolf, Man Out of Time, the first volume is pretty good, even though it involves time travel.
Yeah, you know, I really like the Red Wolf comic books myself. Being a big Conan fan, I kind of like that over the top, super muscular guy, beat up everybody. That's part of my deal, man. I just like that.
It's like that.
Yeah. So what I'm going to talk about is the Phantom Rider, also known as the original Ghost Rider. We all know why Ghost Rider had to be changed, but for our listeners who might not be as well informed as us, when the Ghost Rider first came out, he was a man all in white and a cowboy who would take to the open road in the plains and fight for justice. Unfortunately, Ghost Rider is also what some of the Klansmen call themselves, and they all dressed in white also. So they had to retcon him to be the Phantom Rider. Now, this Ghost Rider didn't have all the super cool powers of our Ghost Rider, the one that pretty much everyone's thinking of. This one kind of shows up, I believe, in 1967. That's correct. February 1967 by Gary Fredrich, Roy Thomas, and Dick Ayers. And it's more of a two-fisted Knight Rider. Yeah, the Knight Rider. So sorry about all the references to the Klan, but at the time they weren't trying to use double entendres. They were just trying to use popular phrases, and they didn't really research them very well. So the Phantom Rider, as he later became known, was just a two-fisted action hero who, you know, fought on the side of the law. And he was a real cool character. And, of course, later on, that becomes the real Ghost Rider. And they retconned it a couple different ways so that that guy, Carter Slade, was also with Flaming Star, the Native American shaman that he went, kind of had some of those powers. So they kind of retconned a little bit in a couple of comic books, and it's all really cool.
And I'm going to agree with you. If you go back and listen to our Ghost Rider episode, I go into great detail about my favorite Ghost Rider series, which is the Ghost Rider you're talking about. It's called Ghost Rider Trail of Tears.
Do you want to give us just a quick synopsis of that one?
Nope. Go listen to that episode.
Go find it. Lazy.
You are a harsh but fair taskmaster, my friend. Who's got a second runner-up to go to? Mikey?
I got Batlash from DC Comics.
Oh, I like Batlash.
He is a pacifist, a ladies' man, and a gambler. You know when he's about to do bad stuff because he takes the flower out of his 10-gallon hat, because that's when he's telling everybody shit's about to get real. He hates fighting, but he constantly ends up in situations where he has to fight his way out of it, but he'd rather talk his way out of it. First premiering in Showcase number 76 back in 1968, created by Joe Orlando, Carmine Infantino, Sheldon Myers, and friend of the podcast, Sergio Argonés. The series was written and plotted by Denny O'Neill and Argonés. It's a great comic book series, but it's going to be hard to find any of those back issues. So what I'm going to recommend for you is to check out the 2008 series called Batlash Guns and Roses. It's also by Sergio Argonés. It's his origin story, and it's available probably on Amazon or Comixology.
I really like that character too. He reminded me a lot of Maverick. Maverick was another Western hero, played in the movies, and he also didn't like to fight, was always fighting, which is pretty funny to me.
Yeah, Batlash was kind of like their version of a hippie, because this was in the early 1970s. They were basing him on the hippies that were out there and about, but they were like, yeah, okay, let's try to make fun of this culture in the Old West. So it was really well done.
It was. And his weapon of choice, of course, the whip. Master of the whip. I don't know why I had to put an accent on that.
I don't know.
But I did. Tommy, who do you got for a runner-up over there, buddy?
Well, another one of my favorites is Rawhide Kid Slap Leather.
Drink. I like that one just because of Andy.
I love this one just because there is a child in this story that makes it for me. The story itself is a retcon of the Rawhide Kid, in which the Rawhide Kid is an over-the-top flaming homosexual, but there's a child whose father is a sheriff in town, and the kid is so disappointed in his parent. He just can't say enough bad things about his dad and how yella he is and how cowardly he is. And the child is just hilarious in the way he's written that I just love this book because of it.
I had something, about this character that I liked a lot. I didn't understand who this character was written for, because not only is it over the top, flaming, gay character, but he was also a bit of a sexual predator. He was always making these double entendres, coming on to people that were straight and, you know, kind of a retrobate. But I gave this comic book to a couple of friends of mine in San Francisco, and they loved the character. They saw a lot of themselves in him. They thought, you know, if I was totally untethered and I had all the fighting skills and all the gun fighting skills and I could just be the cocky self that I wanted to be, I'd be the two gun kid.
Rawhide.
And even when I
Rawhide kid.
And even when I pointed out that he's not the best of people sometimes, they're like, sometimes that's what we want to be. Sometimes you want to see yourself in the antihero. And I understand that because, you know, sometimes I want to see myself in the Punisher. You know, when I'm like really ticked off and I see something on the news and, you know, I just want revenge and escapism, the Punisher is my go-to guy. So I'm glad my friends in San Francisco like this character so much, and they have their kind of revenge fantasy anti-hero to go to also.
Yeah, when I read it, I thought it was a horrible stereotype and I didn't like it at all. So I gave it to Andy to talk about at one of our panels in Philadelphia. And he read it and he was like, nope, it's funny. I like it. I know people like every one of the stereotypes that he's acting out. So cool.
And our friend Andy, of course, is actually king of gay people. And he speaks for all of them.
Yes, yes.
Him and his husband, Chris, they do have that power.
The queen of gay people.
The queen of gay people. They do have that power to speak for all gay people. So it's okay.
It's all but right.
Really, everybody I vented, everyone that I kind of felt weird about this comic, and every person, every LGBTQQAAII person that I showed this particular comic book to, they found something in it that they liked. Or they said, well, you know, I don't like anti-heroes, and that's all this is. So, you know, I found a way to like this character. Josh, who's your next?
I was trying to find this, and I haven't been able to find it. But we were at which convention in Worcester, Tom, when we had the table?
Massive Con.
We were at Massive Con last year, and a few young guys, a few booths down from us, had a Western comic that was like straight up like Maverick, the movie Maverick.
I remember that.
No supernatural, no nothing. It was a straight up gambler and his gunfighter friend. And they did a really good job with it. And now I cannot find either the comic book or their email correspondence to give these guys the boost they deserve. But I promise you, when this podcast is over, and I will do the research, I will track them down, and I will put them on the website.
Yeah, I remember that comic. It really was pretty good. We both read that one. Yeah, we'll have to look that one up. I like that one.
So Josh's pick is Mystery Comic.
Mystery comic.
I will find it.
You guys already did two of my runner-ups. Of course, I was going to do Jonah Hex and the Rawhide Kid. I loved both of those guys. I also like Gunhawks. That was a kind of a short-run comic. Mikey, do you remember Gunhawks?
Of course. I gave you those comics.
You did give me those comics. I thought those were pretty good. And part of me liked the original better. It was a young gun fighter and his freed African-American slave traveling the Old West together. And after reading it a few times over and over again, I kind of found some problems with that comic book, with the relationship, the way it was still set. And later, you know, reading the new revelations of the comic book, some of the later iterations of it, I kind of like that one better. But if you want to have a chance of seeing how some of these classic dualities were represented in comic books when it comes to, you know, freed slave and the next master traveling the Old West or how they communicated with each other, this is not a great depiction of it, but it is a good insight into what artists and writers were kind of imagining it was, which wasn't always all that equal. So it gives you an idea of what was the thinking going on at the time.
Yeah, Reno Jones and Kid Cassidy. They only had
Reno Jones.
They only had 7 issues, but I think have you? I don't know if you're planning on mentioning it. Were you going to talk about the John Ostrander series?
No, but I did like that series.
That's it's a love letter John Ostrander, friend of the podcast, wrote called Blaze of Glory, where he takes all of the old Marvel and Timely Comics Western characters and throws them in together in kind of like a almost a Magnificent Seven scenario, where and the two central characters are Reno Jones and Kid Cassidy, but they're on opposite sides because Reno Jones never really liked Kid Cassidy. Kid Cassidy was his fucking owner and had nothing but bitterness and contempt. It was like, yeah, but we were friends growing up. No, you were my owner growing up. I had to hang out with you because you told me to hang out with you.
Yeah. Remember all those games of tag I lost? I didn't have to lose a single one of those motherfucking games of tag.
Yeah.
Not one.
So, Tom, you mentioned Gunhawk and Ghost Rider. Did you read any of the Western Gunfighters?
Because
they put Gunhawk, Ghost Rider, and Apache Kid together as a trio in Ooh. Western Gunfighters in the 70s, John Romita Sr.
Ooh.
So I know that. I don't know. It's out there. But they were a trio for a while.
Ooh, I gotta look that one up. That's another good one. I would also be remiss not to mention one of the first African American comic books of all time that also happened to be a cowboy one, and that was Lobo. Lobo by Dell Comics. 3-run issue. I have all three. No, I'm sorry, 2-run issue. I have both issues. It was a very short run comic book because the store owners at the time did not believe that anyone would buy an African American Western comic book. Which is funny because I'm going to talk a little bit about African Americans in Westerns as part of my segment later, social justice. But Lobo was a fun little comic, not particularly well written, not particularly well drawn, but I did like the character, very much like the Lone Ranger. And he was against his main nemesis was the King of the Old West, who had a pole arm for some reason. I don't know why the King of the Old West needed a pole arm, man.
Everyone needs a pole arm. Pole arms are awesome.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, pole arms are pretty cool. All right, yeah. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
All right, those are all my runners-ups. I'm done. I'm spent. Who's got a couple others to toss up?
Django/Zorro, Volume 1 by Quentin Tarantino, Matt Wagner, and Estevie Bowles.
It's a good one.
This is put out by Dynamite. In it, Django meets up by chance with Don Diego de la Vega in the West and hires on as his bodyguard. And Don Diego is going to visit the Archduke of Arizona. The Archduke of Arizona is playing a very long game con. He has spent time in a Spanish monastery to basically plant the seeds that this peasant girl is really entitled to Arizona as a duke, a Spanish duke, and he has married her to become the Archduke of Arizona, and he has plans to have railroads built out to Arizona in the hopes that the United States will purchase Arizona from him and make tons of money in this very long, long game con. And his son grew up with the peasant girl and is in love with the peasant girl, making it even more complex. And Don Diego is invited to invest in this opportunity to build the railroads and to make Arizona this big prosperous thing that it's going to be. And him, along with other investors, are invited out to see what they're doing and see how, you know, grand an opportunity it is. And of course, Don Diego, in his alter ego of Zorro, begins to rile up the natives that are being forced into labor, blasting mountains and leveling land, et cetera, and so forth. Django sees what's happening and is also moved by the basically slave labor conditions that are there, and riles up the folk as well. And it ends up that they overthrow the Archduke and expose his crimes, et cetera, and so forth. And it was a great little book put out by Dynamite.
Wow. I almost finished my entire beer by all the basically you said.
But that there was a lot of those.
Does sound like a good book, though.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
So one of my follow-ups is a comic I actually haven't read. But in researching for today's episode, I was just sort of like shuffling through to see if any old covers jog my memory. And it turns out there was a comic book in the 50s, like 52, 53, called Blazing Six Guns. And apparently one of the stars of Blazing Six Guns was Bullseye. And he was a lasso expert and a single shooter. He didn't double draw. He was a single shooter. And in one of the episodes, he fights the villain cowboy who is flying on a pterodactyl on the cover. And it is the issue is Attack of the Devil Bird. Don't miss this exciting Western. And I am going to fucking plumb eBay until I find that issue.
And I'm gonna try to buy that before you do.
God damn it. So it's called Blazing Six Guns issue.
Oh, I know what it's called. I'm already looking.
There's a big pink poorly drawn pterodactyl on the front, and I desperately want to read that comic.
That one sounds like a keeper right there.
That's a keeper.
Why do I have a feeling that at Wizard World somebody's going to be walking around with a flyer that says, "Have you seen this comic?"
Oh, we're cosplaying this. I'm going to be the Devil Bird.
There's got to be a pink pterodactyl onesie out there somewhere.
Oh, and eBay's already got – that was the first thing that came up. Mikey, do you got any last honorable mentions?
My David Bowie cover band.
Nice.
I'd get that out.
I've got a couple of honorable mentions, and I'm surprised you didn't mention him. The Two-Gun Kid.
I do like the Two-Gun Kid. That's another good one.
Created in 1948 for Timely Comics by Stan Lee and – oh, sorry, not the Timely Comic one. The guy's name was Clay Harder. In 1962, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby create another Two-Gun Kid called Matt Hawkins. Yes.
Oh, I just wanted to also mention Vigilante. I forgot Vigilante. I love that guy.
I know. I thought you were going to mention him, too. He was one of the other ones. We'll go back to Vigilante. All right. Let me finish talking about the Two-Gun Kid. He was a lawyer from Boston, known as Matt Hawk or Matt Hawkins. Turns out it was later retconned to being named Matt Leibowitz. So he was one of the first Jewish cowboys, along with Bucky Goldstein.
You're just making stuff up now to show off, but okay. I'm with it.
He had a horse named Thunder and a partner named Boom Boom Brown. Yeah, I'm not making this up. He later travels in time and joins the Avengers and takes some of the equipment that he gets in the future back with him so he can fight crime in the Old West using advanced technology. Again, later on, he is brought back into the future to present day where he appears in She-Hulk Volume 2. He was going to be one of the lawyers, but his license has expired. So he ends up becoming a bounty hunter for Jennifer Walters' law firm. He is the roommate of Awesome Andy the Android and rides around on Hawkeye's Sky Cycle. So what's not to love about him?
Mike is obviously drunk.
Shut up. I'm drunk.
I blame LT for saying and basically too many times.
He might have had 9 number 9s.
Wow, that's like a 72.
That's an 81. Nice try.
Damn it. I took a shot.
Math is not your superpower.
I do not regret taking my shot.
So tell us about Vigilante.
DC's Vigilante a cool superhero. His alter ego was a country singer, which I thought was cool. He had all the superpowers of a cowboy.
And a motorcycle.
And a motorcycle, which looked more like a scooter to me.
Yeah.
Because it had the step through it a couple of times. And it was a really cool motorcycle / scooter. So it's one of the reasons I like him. He is also one of those characters that easily comes in and out of time with Jonah Hex a few times. So we see him in the Justice League. We see him in the Old West. In the Old West, he usually doesn't have the motorcycle. And once again, he has all the powers, like Montenegro, all the powers of the guy he dresses as. Hey, that'd be a cool superpower. You put on a costume, you get the power. Wardrobe man.
And he has one of the coolest supervillains of the Golden Age, the Dummy.
Tell me a little bit about the Dummy. I've only read him in the Seven Soldiers of Victory, and I don't remember the Dummy coming up.
So the Dummy is a little person who disguises himself as a ventriloquist doll in order to commit crimes.
And so when
nobody realizes that the guy that he's sitting in the lap for is not the real guy who's in charge of everything.
It's really the Dummy.
Yeah.
So, nice.
That's my favorite thing about the Vigilante.
Read a book.
I'd also like to talk about Belgium, because Belgium has one of the most robust comic industries. They've given us Tintin, Asterix and Obelix, the Smurfs, and their most popular Western hero is Lucky Luke.
Lucky Luke.
He was created by a cartoonist, Morris, in 1946. And up until his death, he was the writer in all those comics. It is a parody / love letter to the Wild West filled with he pulls from Western, real Western people and pulls them into the comic. Lucky Luke has the smartest horse in the world named Jolly Jumper as his steed, and also has the stupidest dog in the world, Rantan Can, which is a parody, obviously, of Rin Tin Tin. He has been translated into 23 languages. He's had movies made, both live action and cartoons. He had a TV cartoon movie made by Hanna-Barbera. It's available on YouTube, called The Dalton Gang. I watched it. It is horribly racist. He also has video games.
It is horribly racist. I love the enthusiasm which you don't.
It's not just racist, man. That's horribly racist.
Looking at it from today's mirror, it's just tone deaf back in the 70s. They're not like trying to be mean, but really it's racist. Okay, let's...
It's basically everything Hanna-Barbera ever did, yeah.
Yeah, it is. So everybody, YouTube, Lucky Luke, the Dalton brothers, or the Dalton boys, you'll find it. And, whenever there's an Indian or a Chinaman, as some mine owners would call them, come on to the... it's just bad. But... you should really check out Lucky Luke. He is a staple of Belgium comics. There's also another Belgian comic that I'm surprised you didn't talk about. It's by the artist Mobius, and it's called Blueberry. It is about a racist slave owner who, during the Civil War, there's something happens, and he actually gets saved by a slave, and he decides he was wrong the whole time, and then proceeds to go out into the West and find racists and kick them in the ass. It is all about him turning his whole view of thinking and then trying to redeem himself for it. So, interesting comic. Again, that's Blueberry. It might be harder to find an English translation than the Lucky Luke, but I'm sure you can do it.
You know, I do love a nice redemption tale. It's one of my favorites, so I might have to look that one up.
And Mobius is one of the most amazing comic book artists. So if you get a chance to check out the art in there, it's just spectacular. Even if it's in French or I guess it'd be Flemish, it still would be worth checking out just for the art alone. I'm surprised nobody talked about the modern Western superhero that we have. He's not really a superhero, but he's an anti-hero. That's Garth Ennis's Preacher.
I was considering that. It is in that motif. It's modern day, but it is really along those lines. I was on the fence whether or not to include it. And honestly, I've really only read the first trade for Preacher. I never really got much further than that. It's still somewhere in the queue of a long list of can't even catch up to my current books list.
Yeah, Jesse Custer is definitely a Western, an anti-Western hero, a Western anti-hero.
An anti-Western,
those are, those are two things.
That guy hates
things.
Cowboys.
I hate Westerns.
East forever.
That's all I got. What about you guys? Anybody else got anything?
I shot all my load. I did like the Haunted West. The Haunted Western, those were some fun comic books. Those were pretty much just horror comics in the Old West. It was called Haunted Western, and those were fun.
They also had Weird Western Tales, which...
Oh, another good one, yeah.
Which starred a guy named Scalp Hunter, which was unfortunate.
Oh. Yeah.
However, Brian Azzarello wanted to do a remake of it for Vertigo, and they originally told him he could have the Scalp Hunter character, and he was like... No, I do not want that. So he actually called it the series Scalped instead. I've tried reading it. I don't like it, but it's very popular. So if you're a Brian Azzarello fan, you might like to check that out too.
This is too on point to be my tangent. Top three Western movies real quick. Let's go.
Unforgiven.
High Plains Drifter.
Yeah, I'm going with Unforgiven,
Hail Rider,
and Open Range.
Hail Rider, Serenity.
Serenity's a zombie movie.
No, it's still a Western.
High Plains Drifter. The Outlaw Josie Wales.
Magnificent Seven.
A few dollars more.
You went for the sequel? Yeah.
Yeah, the sequel is actually better.
Okay.
Fistful of Dollars is a great movie. Don't get me wrong. A few dollars more just hit it a little bit better for me.
True Grit.
Oh, that's a good one.
First one, the original?
The original. Yeah,
the remake. The original. I actually like the remake. I like the remake better.
Yeah, I liked the female character in the original better. And
you mean the mom from Better Off Dead? That's the actress.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, and Glenn Campbell. I mean, love me some Glenn Campbell.
Yeah,
he is
I'm just
a rhinestone
guy, though.
Yeah. I want to give an honorable mention to... Honorable mention of Quick Draw. That was a pretty good movie. It was a bad movie, but it was a good movie, too.
My third is Blazing Saddles.
Saddles is brilliant, yeah.
That is brilliant. A brilliant movie.
It's got to be a comedy for me, so I can't put it as a Western. But if there was a Western comedy category, what would take its place? Come on.
Although, if you are a fan of Harrison Ford, the Cisco Kid, with him and Gene Wilder, is amazing.
That is pretty funny.
And also, the Cisco Kid is a Jewish cowboy, much along the lines of the Two Gun Kid and Bucky Goldstein.
Well, one of my favorite lines is in the Cisco Kid. Would you give us your knife? I have no knife. Would you give us your gun? I have no gun. What kind of man comes to the West without a gun or a knife? I'm Jewish. I'm a Jew. It was funny. It was a funny line. And he would give up everything but the Torah. The only thing he wouldn't give the Indians was the Torah. And when they threatened to burn that, he said he'd sacrifice his own life instead. And he won them over. It was a good movie.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a tangent. Josh, you also have a tangent for us?
Before I go on the tangent, anybody out there who loves samurai movies, go watch Ken Watanabe's remake of Unforgiven in Japanese. Because that movie... is brilliant.
Oh, I still have that. I have your copy. I do.
So he's particularly talking to you so you can return it.
To watch it and give it the fuck back.
You got it, buddy.
My tangent is a little kind of sad, I think. Today, Margot Kidder passed. Lois Lane, the original Superman franchise, dies at the age of 69. Really kind of fell into the Superman curse. She really didn't do much else besides the four Superman movies, along with I'm sorry, I don't know her name anymore. Tangent is another actor that you love, or actress, that really is known for just one thing.
Karen Allen.
I don't know who that is.
Indiana Jones' girlfriend.
Marion.
Miriam.
Yeah. Okay.
Can you name any other movie she was in?
Maybe no, probably not, I guess.
And she has an okay idea. I can look up her. I was just watching that original Indiana Jones movie yesterday, me and my wife. Enjoy a nice movie night on Sundays, and we watched Indiana Jones the original, and it was terrific. Karen Allen is really good in it, and I was like, gosh, that's the only two movies I've ever seen her in was that one and The Crystal Skull.
I don't know what that second one thing you're talking about is.
Yeah, I can remake that one in 2 minutes and make it palatable. Just take out the aliens. That's all I gotta do. Oh, it wasn't really aliens. Okay. And we're done. Josh, who's yours?
I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it. It's a tangent. I'm trying to think of something now.
Karen Allen came right to mind when you guys said that.
I don't try to, like, you know, come up with this stuff beforehand because then I feel too prepared. It's like coming up with a goat tomorrow and waiting a week and then having, like, you know, prepared notes to debate with. That's not fair. That's not cool.
All right, Lance.
She was also the girlfriend in Scrooged.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't remember is that. Not at all.
Lance Guest, also known as Alex Rogan, still don't know who he is. He's the last fucking starfighter.
Oh yeah, that movie was brilliant.
Yeah, and dude never did anything after that. I'm sure he did something else, but did he?
did he?
Yeah.
Oh, that is such a good movie. When I was a kid, man, I loved that movie.
Yeah.
Such a good movie that Seth Rogen tried to get the rights to it. They wouldn't give it to him. That's why he made Future Man.
You mean Futterman?
Yeah.
I cannot wait for the second season of Futterman.
I watched the shit out of that. Plus, speaking of second season's glow, second season coming at us, buddy.
No.
And while LT tries to think of something and Josh tries to think of something, Have you guys seen the Lost in Space? Apparently, everybody's talking about it.
I liked it.
The Netflix one?
Yeah.
How's the new Dr. Smith?
The new Dr. Smith is kind of the highlight.
Yeah. Dr. Smith's always been the highlight, let's face it.
Yeah, he's always.
So when Christopher was young and my wife and I were living in Bridgewater, one of the kids that was on his Little League team, his dad was the older brother from the original Lost in Space.
Oh.
The older brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's his name?
Bill Mumy was the only boy in the Lost in Space family.
No, he wasn't.
There was an older brother.
Judy and Penny and Will Robinson. West was the pilot and soldier, and then the two family members and Major Smith.
Yeah, are you thinking of Don West? He wasn't a brother. He was the pilot.
No.
Yeah, he was.
Don't question my Lost in Space knowledge.
Don West was definitely not in the family
because he was going to port both those girls.
He was trying to get with Judy, with the elder sister Judy. Yeah,
there's a lot of Lost in Space porn out there. I was just trying to look it up on IMDb. I'm sorry, guys. I'm just.
All right. For mine, I'm going to go with Tom Baker.
Oh, yeah. What was he in? Who was he?
Who's that?
He was in Sinbad.
Oh, all right.
Oh, man. I wish we were doing a goat on this one. I think I would have won.
Okay, so. Yeah, then he was. He must have been the pilot then.
Major Don West?
That guy just walked up to you at Bridgewater and went, "Hey, remember Lost in Space? I was the older brother."
Yeah.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't see her a lot, but yeah, that's me.
It, was his name Chuck? Did he go upstairs in the Jupiter One and just never been seen again?
No, even in his bio on IMDb, he's Scituate, Mass. Yeah, that's him.
So he was Don West. He wasn't the older brother. He was the pilot. He didn't even know what the fuck he was.
Well, he told me that he because I didn't watch the show at the time, but he said that they didn't want to hire somebody to be in the robot all the time. So basically all the adults had to like rotate into the thing. So if they weren't like in the scene, they got jammed into the robot to walk the thing around.
Oh my God. Can you imagine how sweaty and disgusting that thing was?
Disgusting that thing was. Yeah. And it was just like a group effort. And he's just like, and I was probably in the least amount of scenes. So I was always in that goddamn robot.
Sucks for that guy.
That is my favorite Lost in Space story ever.
It is.
Fuck you, mine Bill Mummy. Too. You never give me a good story like that. Josh, apparently, did you have an answer?
Tangent. No, I got nothing. Yeah. My own tangent. Hmm. Failed and failed again.
That's terrible.
Josh, yeah, go with Peter Cushing.
What? No, what are you, a monster?
Peter Mayhew?
Okay, I'll go with that. That's a good one. Yeah, he's never done anything. Poor guy. His bad knees. He can barely stand.
Yeah. Super nice.
It's all right.
Apparently, there's a big rift between him and that Swedish guy or Dutch guy that they've got playing the new Chewbacca. They don't get along. Yeah, there's heat. That's all I'm saying. There's some heat.
A lot of heat in that suit. That's for damn sure.
A lot of heat. All right, then. Well, that was a great tangent. Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box for me?
At the front of the long box, I have Briggsland by Brian Wood. It is about a group of anti-government people living out in the woods who conduct all their business by, you know, stealing credit cards. It's the series starts off with the father of this clan that has been in jail for 20-something years because he tried to assassinate the president of the United States. And now his wife has decided to take over, which is not easy at all because not only are they separatists, they're also misogynists and a lot and really racist too. So it is a story about the matriarch of the family trying to take control of the family. At the same time, it tells a story of the ATF agents who are trying to investigate the Briggs clan. And it's supposed to be a television show on FX.
It sounds like something they would make. Absolutely, 100%. Tommy, what do you got? What do you got in the back of the long box?
I have Shepperton's Waltz by Patrick Killick, Mark Laming, David Stokes, Heather Breckel. It came out in 2013 by Oort Cloud Comics. And this is a space western where Angus Shepperton is the last surviving member of a town in a mining town out on a planet. And he is the last surviving member of the town. And the only reason that he is surviving is because he is drunk all the time. And all of the other townspeople have been basically taken over by aliens and have been turned into aliens. And he has to kill off the aliens in order to release their spirits. He has to do this by staying drunk all the time and fighting these different aliens. And it's a really good short story.
What was the name of it again?
Shepperton's Waltz.
Hmm. It sounds a lot like our podcast.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we get drunk in order to keep the aliens from infecting our brains. At least that's why I do.
Yeah. I mean, I get drunk so that aliens don't infect Mike's brain.
It's true.
And I do it for the same exact reason.
And yeah. Tom does try to kill me every podcast.
Not every podcast, you big whiner.
Yeah. Like
every third.
75% tops.
tops.
5/8.
Maybe 78%.
Yeah, there was a lot that I resonated with this comic.
8/16.
Josh, I would say it's 4/8. Is that about right, Josh?
Josh.
Did I get that right? For my little bit, I'd like to talk just briefly on social justice because I know I've talked to this point to death because it's one of my favorite subjects, but I want to once again hit on Bass Reeves. Bass Reeves, a real Old West person. He was a sheriff. He is said to have killed 14 outlaws in self-defense and made over 3,000 arrests. This African-American freed slave is what the Lone Ranger is based on. He was a master of disguise. He was friends of Indians. He had a trademark silver bullets made for him by the town that he was protecting as a show of, as a way of honoring him. That was like his gold watch. They made him all these silver bullets, but he started using the silver bullets because he kind of had to at one point. He finally, died in 1910, but a lot of people acknowledge that this was who the Lone Ranger was based on. Now, if you extrapolate that out a little bit, the Lone Ranger is the basics for a lot of American comic books. There's a lot of the Secret Identity, the, Superior Steed, the horse transforming into like the Batmobile or other super vehicles, the signature way that, the silver bullets, the signature marks and the mask. A lot of that can be, as part of the C's for a lot of other superheroes. So you can argue that Bass Reeves, an African-American lawman, was the seed for a lot of superheroes. At least that's what I want to do when I do my thesis on this. So if you've never looked him up, look up Bass Reeves. Fascinating character, fascinating part of our civil rights and social justice history in the United States. Also, if you watch the Drunk History Bass Reeves episode, it's great. Truly, truly great.
I do like me some Drunk History.
Damn straight you do. And I think that's going to do it for us.
I would like to plug Kirby Crackle, the geek rock band that provides our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com, or you can buy their music on iTunes or Bandcamp. I'd also like to thank some of our fellow podcasts, including Nerds Who Get Laid Sometimes. Great podcast to go check out. And then, of course, our friends over at Sammy Savage Incorporated, the Who's Next podcast, if you're interested in games and sex robots. And, of course, their other podcast, Losing Lives, where they review video game-themed movies. Oh, and the Nola Nerd Couple. Can't forget about them.
Do we have to call them the Nola Nerd? It's the Nola Nerd family at this point.
Yeah.
Branding.
Marked as the coward who ran. What do you do when you're branding and you know you're a man? See, that ties right into our
theme.
Western theme. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Not a lot of people to remember this TV show Branded, though. Tommy, you got anything to plug?
I'd like to plug geekorthodox.com.
Geekorthodox.com?
Geekorthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things such as stained glass prints, Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses, posters, and more.
And between them, three of the sexiest feet you'll ever find on the planet.
And you should subscribe to Eddie and the Whirlpools YouTube channel. So check out their original music, Eddie and the Whirlpools.
And speaking of subscribing, please, if you have a chance, go over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/maybe/ The Long Box Guys, and check it out. We get an extra bonus podcast every week, no matter what you pledge. We hope you pledge us a couple bucks. It keeps us rocking and rolling to all these events and keeps our RSS feed alive for all you fine folks who, for some reason, like listening to us jabber on.
Yeah, well, I would like to plug the Retroverse. If you like the 80s and you like Dungeons & Dragons, check out the creators of the Retroverse at lasersandliches.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at Snicklesocks. That's right, at Snicklesocks. By the way, his Twitter name has become my favorite alternative for swearing when there are kids around. Snicklesocks.
Snicklesocks. Good. Good on you, boy.
So go check him out.
I will, actually. I will. All right, and that does it for us. We'll be talking to you next week about all the fun adventures we had at Philadelphia Comic Con. And, Mike, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
Yeah, whatever.
I blame LT.
It's like Drunk History, but for drunks.
Basically, it's basically the basicest comic book podcast ever, basically. That should kill the last of anyone's brain cells who's playing the drinking game. Take a shot every time we say the word basic or basically. And don't forget, and I'm sorry, I almost forgot. Josh, we're going to be taking a long road trip. That car, that's got to be your sector.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what my car's name is?
No.
Scotty James!
Scotty James! Greatest car ever!
Sexiest car to ever driven on a highway.
God damn it.
Scotty James.
I did a spit take.
The veiniest car of all time, Scotty James.
Oh, yes.
What car it is.
Sweet, Scotty James.
Coming down that hill. Oh, Scotty James.
Scotty James, once bitten by a rattlesnake after 4 days of pain and suffering, the rattlesnake died of Scotty James poisoning. Scotty James.
Scotty James.
Scotty James. And that'll do it for us. Don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love. You're going to live longer. I love everyone, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
I build a robot, every time I sink a ship, every time I throw a girl off of a big old building or abandoned bridge, it seems you're always there to stop me. I've had enough, I'm sick of it. No more scheming, no more stealing, I think I'm done with all of this. So I took my death ray and put it on the shelf.
One thing we have to plug right off the bat is Wizard World.
Nope.
This will be
drop when you get.
We just got back from Wizard World.
We're going to talk about that next podcast.
Oh my god, we got Wizard so World. Drunk.
We got so much fun. It was unbelievable.
Do you remember when you open mouth kissed that police horse?